see how this grabs you. What I've discovered about free energy is that the source of free energy is inductive reactance, namely the impedance of the inductive field surrounding a coil or transmission line. It's a very specific type of resistance, namely the reactance of inductivity. Now, the other thing I've noticed is that coils are very good at, ironically speaking, they are very good at creating voltage out of their impedance. And sadly enough, inductors do not make for being very good storehouses of voltage. The very voltage they create, they cannot store it efficiently. It creates a traffic jam of impedance. The very voltage that they create increases their impedance by adding to it. You know, just imagine, if you will, two different scenarios. One, you enter a freeway and there's nobody on there but you. You can go any speed you want to. The other scenario, a freeway clogged with traffic, so much so that it's not even moving. It's a parking lot of vehicles. Well, you're not going to be moving, right? Because the traffic, the voltage is so high that it impedes the flow of traffic and by creating its own resistance in addition to whatever resistance was already there. And there's always some there, but now you've added to it a humongous amount. So this is the same thing that happens on a coil. Now we can correct it by putting a capacitor nearby to store that voltage so that it does not impede the flow of traffic anymore, because now it's in a safe place. It's in a capacitor. It's not in the coil anymore. But what if current and voltage, the polarity of each, should become inverted with respect to each other such that voltage and current is out of phase by 180 degrees, one half cycle of oscillation? Now the current, instead of moving away from the high voltage area, depleting that area of voltage and helping to equalize it with the target area that it is sending that voltage to via the flow of current. Instead, the inverted relationship between current and voltage causes the current to flow in the opposite direction towards the area of high impedance, namely creating high voltage. And it keeps doing that even though the so-called tail end of the flow of current has no voltage because it's been depleted because of this inverted relationship. It shows that there's really no relationship at all between the so-called source of current and the target of current. It no longer is applicable. You know, we were living under a delusion that the current was depleting the voltage, the area of high voltage, and distributing it to areas of lower voltage to equalize them. That's a delusion. In reality, components do their own thing. It's just that when their polarity is in alignment, it appears to be a throughput of energy. But when the voltage and the current are out of phase by 180 degrees, there is no throughput. Every component does its own dance and sings to it sings to its own tune, but at a common beat. That's the one thing they do share, is the beat, the frequency. But otherwise, they're doing their own thing, and the coils have become generators. Although they are generating electrical energy which is out of phase with itself by a whole half cycle, so it's not really power anymore. It's imaginary. It's reactive power. Be that as it may, it is power. Now, the interesting part about this are all these relationships. So, impedance causes a response by the coil to increase its voltage, and if the voltage is out of phase with the current by a whole half cycle, even more so. Instead of the voltage getting depleted, it keeps getting bigger. Now, I said impedance, didn't I? Well, I meant to say voltage, and yet it's true, the impedance goes up as well, because the voltage, the byproduct of voltage being a byproduct of impedance, becomes impedance itself. Now, I just said impedance is equivalent to voltage for all intents and purposes, because once this cycle gets started, adhering to the voltage being out of phase with the current by a whole half cycle, once this situation gets started, it's a non-stop situation until it explodes, because the voltage is equivalent to impedance, adding to it, increasing the voltage even more. But what kind of impedance are we talking about? We're talking about inductive impedance. That means that the inductive impedance goes up along with the voltage. Now, inductive impedance is what started this in the first place. And this is why I've said so many times in the past on other posts and whatnot that in the field of electrical reactants, there are, if you go to the article on Wikipedia, there are three mathematical relationships that they state right up front: capacitive reactants, inductive reactants, and reactive impedance. And when you stare at those three equations simultaneously, all together at once, a very funny thing may happen in your mind. It happened in mine. An integration occurs in which you realize that impedance and reactance are one and the same thing. That inductive reactants and inductance are one and the same thing. Capacitive reactants and capacitive impedance, and for that matter, capacitance, is one and the same thing. They make the mathematical relationship very obvious to infer from those mathematical statements that they have there. They've provided for you. It becomes so obvious. But what I was missing was the relationship between inductive reactance, inductance, inductive impedance, and voltage. And yet now, in thinking about it logically, it all becomes very obvious because of that missing ingredient that's not there in that Wikipedia article, a special case phenomenon which nobody ever talks about, in which voltage and current are out of phase by 180 degrees. Their orientation is opposed, their orientations are opposed to each other. They are no longer, 0 degrees of phase relation, namely a positive unity power factor. Now it's a negative unity power factor. Some electrical engineers will go, that's not a power factor, that's just electrical generation. That's exactly what the passive sign convention defines as the generation of electrical power, only they do it as a convenience. That's not the way, they know that's not the way it actually is, because coils of wire in an electrical rotary generator perform the same phenomenon that the coils in an electric motor do. The current lags behind the voltage by 90 degrees. So it's not really happening in a generator, yet you'll never find a simulator, based on Berkeley Spice family of simulators, you'll never find one in that family that does not depict current opposed to voltage by 180 degrees. You'll get it in the battery, the emulation of a battery within a Berkeley Spice family of simulators. You'll get it within a sine wave generator. It happens regardless of whether it's DC or AC or triangle waves, sine waves, doesn't matter. Whatever is the generator in that simulator, it's always the voltage is opposed to the current by 180 degrees. Yet in the real world, it never happens. Under conventional terms, under conventional expectations, it's simply the way it's modeled in the simulator, yet it's never fulfilled. They never teach the electrical engineer how to fulfill that requirement that they made in theory when they depict the generator within the context of a simulator. So it's very interesting that I stumbled on how to describe what free energy amounts to being is the fulfillment of that passive sign convention. Something that never happens in the training of an electrical engineer in the first place. So boy, if I wasn't a meditator, I'd be really going nuts because of all the lies. And this is what upset me in my childhood, was being surrounded by petty liars and petty thieves and within the domain of my own family. That made me very upset. But the lies don't stop. No matter where I look, there is falsification going on and fraud. And the case in point of electrical engineering is no exception. But because it's a technical topic, who among us can pierce through the lie and vindicate free energy? It took me 5 years of intensive, and I mean the first year especially, intensive, many, many hours per day spent on the computer training my mind to think like a simulator. And it doesn't matter whether or not the simulations I was coming up with are buildable circuits. The fact remains, the theory promotes it, regardless of whether or not we understand how to translate those free energy simulations into a real world build, because you have to translate them. You can't take them at face value and expect to build them and they'll work the first time, because the simulators are not accurate in depicting the real world. But they are accurate in depicting their perspective, their slant of the virtual world of theory, of electrodynamic theory. They are accurate in that respect. Sometimes they're too accurate because the real world has all kinds of flaws in it, making it more complicated. You know, the simulator is an oversimplification of the real world because that's what theory amounts to. It's an abstraction. You abstract, in other words, you extract from your observations of the natural world, and then you make theories about it, or hypotheses. And those hypotheses become accepted, whether or not any of them have been proven, largely because of the testimonials of all the expertise, the experience of people going over more than a century in this field of electrical engineering. So in many cases, there's no physical proof. For instance, complex numbers, imaginary numbers, which are necessary to describe electrical reactants. You can't prove the physical existence of imaginary numbers. All you know is, well, it works. The guy, Heron of Alexandria, I didn't know it goes back that far, that imaginary numbers were discovered that far back, but it wasn't until René Descartes, put it succinctly into words. And then we kind of say, okay, well, he was the first guy who really helped push the promotion of the idea of the square root of -1. But you can't prove it in the physical world. There is no proof because it doesn't exist in the physical world. It depicts a reality that exists in another world, in another dimension of existence, which Eric Dollard likes to call counter space. It's literally not in space as we think of it as a physical reality. It's counterintuitive to physical experience. So it's kind of appropriate to call it counterspace. But be that as it may, there's no physical proof of it. And yet it's the foundation for electrical reactants and free energy. And I've just described how it works. It's inductors, or conductors if you prefer, which have the property of inductance, that generates this special type of impedance that serves as the foundation for free energy, or the possibility for the foundation of free energy, so provided we take care of certain other features. Now, I haven't said all the features. I've just said the operational features that are like mind-blowing, right? But there's some practical features that also must be required, and that is, you don't smother the darn thing in a massive amount of voltage input. You know, if you figure out all the amount of voltage your load requires, plus a little extra for thermodynamic losses, You're going to smother this process and suppress it. That's the easiest way to sabotage free energy, is to go by the conventional wisdom of physics that says energy in has to equal energy out. Well, the only thing that comes out that equals what went in is the voltage. That's all conservation of energy represents, is the voltage. And it's done by way of, it's called voltage drop relationships that you mathematically figure out among all your components. It has to come to zero. And so electrical engineers, when they're asked, well, is there energy in the universe, they'll say no, it all comes out to zero, because that's the way voltage drop works. But only under a specific conventional wisdom that is forced upon our machinery, in that we give them all the voltage they need plus a little extra to spare. That's the only time that works. But when you do it in which you don't care anymore to give the circuit the voltage it needs, because you don't want it to be held responsible for creating the current that you need to create. So by one means or another, you restrict your current. So either you don't give it a whole lot of voltage, or if you do give it a moderate amount of voltage, in any case, you restrict the flow of current coming out of your so-called voltage source using a very large resistor, like 100 megaohms of resistance, let's say. Now that you've restricted the flow of current, it'll be possible. You've restricted the wattage, basically, of input. So now you're not putting in any power to speak of. What you're putting in at this point is not power, is not electrical power. What you're putting in, or what you're inputting, is a signal. Because a signal is all you need to serve as a catalyst, provided that this catalyst is of extremely low power, extremely low current, and consequentially extremely low power, regardless of how you effect that result. Or that cause, I should say. Now, it can be DC input. It can be a sine wave input. It can't be anything else, though. I've never found it possible to create free energy by a way of inputting a triangle wave, even though triangle waves are going to be the result. That's another thing I haven't mentioned. When we create this condition of voltage and current being out of phase by 180 degrees, what we've done is we've taken away the ability for voltage to reach saturation, and consequently we have also made it impossible for current to reach saturation. Now, electrodynamics engineering, electrical engineering, never gives credit where credit is due, that the lack of saturability of voltage is the cause of the lack of the saturability of current. They just say it's, you know, the non-saturation of current and leave it at that. But in any case, regardless, it creates triangle waves. But these triangle waves ride on top of the sine wave or the DC that you're putting in. Now, you only get away with inputting DC if you create oscillations within your circuit that automatically happen as a consequence of DC, low-level DC with restricted current being put into the circuit. So one way or another, you're going to have to either create the sine wave in one section of your circuit, creating oscillations, or else you input it as sine waves, already set up. And once you do that, triangle waves occur because of the separation between voltage and current that you've also set up, of 180 degrees separation between them. And these triangle waves ride on top of the sine waves. So your sine waves, let's say you're inputting sine waves, the sine waves literally will be diminishing in power if you don't keep it up. Let's say, you know, sometimes I would set up a pre-charged condition on capacitors so that I'm not putting in power on a constant basis. I give it a little spark of impulse and I let it go at that, and yet it builds up all this free energy rises. Its amplitude rises to infinite oblivion. But, you know, especially under those conditions, it's very poignant that the amplitude of the sine wave created by the initial precharged capacitance or capacitor slowly dies out. Yet the triangle waves that it creates of free energy, namely the voltage out of phase with the current by 180 degrees, keeps growing in amplitude and, as a consequence, frequency, because the circuit is attempting to store some of that amplitude, that rising amplitude, in the form of rising frequency, but it can only do so much, and so everything keeps rising anyway. But it's the rising amplitude, you know, the so-called, you know, reactive power is rising as a consequence, as a causative consequence, and the rise of frequency is an effectual consequence of this massive unleashment of free energy that keeps building because the current is moving in the wrong direction anyway. So it's not going to dissipate anything, any kind of voltage increase. Now, if you put a capacitance in parallel with the inductor, under normal circumstances, it would take the voltage off the inductor and cause it the traffic jam to go away on that inductor so that the inductor's, the current, can flow within the inductor. But because because the current is out of phase with the voltage by 180 degrees, it doesn't come off the inductor. Yet the current manifests anyway, and the lack of the traffic jam manifests anyway, and it makes it possible to do something other than just a Tesla coil, you know, in which you raise, you create all this massive voltage, but not a whole lot of current. Instead, you create both current and voltage, and you can get them in any proportion you want. This is what Donald Smith would say, and I would oftentimes wonder about it until I learned this little secret trick. You know, you just put a capacitor in parallel with the inductor, not a problem. end of that problem. How do you get current, a free current, as well as free voltage? Anybody can create free voltage. That's easy. The hard part's creating free current along with the free voltage so that you get free power. Even though it's reactive power, you know, the current out of phase with the voltage by 180 degrees still is for free. You didn't have to pay much. In fact, you forced yourself to make sure you did not pay much in order to get it at all. Otherwise, you wouldn't get it. Oh, boy. But, so, since the impedance... So I'll reiterate. So since the impedance is equivalent to the inductance that spawned it, and the voltage is not only a byproduct, but is a causative factor for increasing the impedance, because now it's a chicken and the egg situation in which you can't tell anymore which was the chicken and which was the egg, which came first. They just keep, it's a positive feedback situation, and they both keep augmenting each other's reality. And because the voltage is out of phase with the current by 180 degrees, we can get this relationship such that the inductive impedance starts to build up voltage, and the voltage creates a traffic jam of sorts, amassing more impedance, which is inductive impedance because that's where it's amassing that voltage. So now the inductive impedance goes up, which means the inductance goes up. The field, the inductive field surrounding the coil, is all that matters. The inductance of the coil itself is what starts the thing, and it's always there to serve as a backdrop or a backbone to the whole process that's taking place. But it's not where it's at. You know, it's like you provide a dance floor, but so what? If you don't have people come and dance, you're not going to have dancing taking place. And you're not going to have a party either. It's just going to be an empty room. And, oh yeah, we invited the guests, but nobody came. So we didn't have a party. We just had a potentiality of an opportunity of a party. But nobody came by invitation, and nobody crashed the party either. So we never had a party, even though we could have. So the inductive field surrounding the coil is all that matters. That's what we create, and that's what gets registered in the circuit as an electrodynamic phenomenon. The inductor is just the dance floor, you know. It's like the producer of a movie. Without the director, there's no movie. But without the producer, there's no movie either. So it's a combination of factors. And some of them are potentialities, and some of them are the actualizations of those potentialities. And you need both to pull this off, or to, even just to pull off normal energy in a circuit for that matter. But especially so in the case of free energy, It's a similar complexity of a different type that nobody's familiar with. And it's, I don't consider it rocket science, but and yet it is slightly technical because it's out of the norm. That's the only reason why it's such a mystery, is that it's never taught. Why? Because it's bad for the economy. It'll make money go to, the value of money go to zero, because money's not based on anything anyway. It's based on our perception of its worth. And our perception would go to zero, and inflation would go skyrocketing because of a competition with so many lay people and whatnot, and hobbyists, electrical engineer hobbyists, that are busy issuing their own energy into circulation, into their usage, into their circulation, causing them not to depend on feeding the commercial interest of conventional energy. So the prices of conventional energy would go up, the value of the dollar would go down, because it would not be in use so much to pay for energy. It would only be used for constructing the circuit and maybe the maintenance of it, but not for the energy itself. And when you get a reduction in the flow of money, it's called velocity in economics. When the velocity of money goes down, the value of money goes down as well. And this is why in the corporate world as well as in government, it's so important to keep commerce going by even if they have to create fictional needs, fictional necessities that require the expenditure of money in order to access those necessities. In other words, the possibility for getting something for nothing is not allowed. And so this idea that there's no such thing as a free lunch is not a law of the universe. It's a sad fact after it is implemented and forced to be maintained by human intervention. It's not a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's a man-made construct to keep the economy going. And free energy, unfortunately, gets in the way of that. So it's never going to become a reality from authority figures, because it can't, because authority figures are trying to maintain the status quo of a privileged class of making up a small end of society, population of society, versus the have-nots that make up the bulk of society. You know, we have a very artificial society that has nothing to do with help thy neighbor, you know? It has nothing to do with that. You know, help thy neighbor is only the unfortunate ones. Or to put it another way, money is only a problem to those who don't have it, because everything is predicated on money. So it's not so much that money corrupts, but that we have corrupted money by tagging everything with it. And it becomes an anchor weight. It makes it very hard for the average Joe or the average Sarah to lead a comfortable life. They got to struggle like crazy. Everybody knows this, right? But we think it's normal, but it's a man-made construct to be unfair so that a few people can laugh their socks off. Oh boy, we got it made and everybody else is drowning. Oh well, enough said, I think. But I had the liberty, the luxury of devoting my time and effort without any axe to grind or protect. And it became self-validating what I pursued, that I ended up understanding how free energy works. And so let me just give you one example. Okay, I just stated a few conspiracy theories. Let me give you one that's actually happened. President Eisenhower, in his farewell address, stated to the nation, "Beware of the military-industrial complex." Now, where did that come from? You know, it kind of came out of the blue. Well, he wasn't naming names. Why? Because he didn't want to get into trouble. And he was on his way out, so he definitely was not going to get into too much trouble. What he was referring to was Exxon Oil had pressured him while he was president to put pressure on the Premier of Canada at the time to in turn suppress a free energy group of scientists who had developed the ability to create anywhere between 5 and 15 times more electrical energy output than what was input and get free refrigeration at the same time. Suppress that, close it down, and shut it up. Now, they made one more attempt to reach the commercial market or to reach, you know, any kind of legitimacy, because they had already developed their technology over the course of about a decade, and so they were ripe and ready to take it to market. But they were shut up by, ultimately, Exxon. But using President Eisenhower and the Premier of Canada along the way. Well, they were going to meet with JFK a month before he was killed. Well, that should say enough all by itself. I mean, we know how much the oil companies along with the automobile industry, hated the first onset of the electric car trying to become popular back in the late 1990s and early 2000 decade. It was all harassed and shut down. All you have to do is watch Who Killed the Electric Car, the movie. Anyway, so there's a lot of politics involved, a lot of money involved, and egos involved, and it's just, you know, it's the martial arts reality of who's sitting on top of the pile of shit that our society is composed of, because the pile, it doesn't matter whether it's shit or gold or whether we think it's one thing and it's something else. It's a pile. It's a pyramidal shape in which the people at the top are few. They got it made, but they keep their thumb screw pressure on the base of that pyramid, which is the remaining majority of the population that are not allowed to have all that abundance of life shared with them. Now, another way to describe this is to say that distribution is the problem as to why we have so many people doing without the basic necessities and so few have so much. This was coined by Buckminster Fuller, yet it's a kind of an odd way of describing the pyramidal shape of power in our society, in which, you know, there are very few haves and very many have-nots, that it's a problem of distribution. Well, yeah, it's a problem that we don't share. And we make darn certain sharing does not happen, that you have to be privileged. You know, not just wealthy. You have to know someone, right? You got to be in the know. You've got to be, you know, it's like, it's a clique. Anyway, I don't want to say anything more because it just sounds so ugly. The more you drag on describing it, it's enough to sour yourself inside out, you know. So I better stop it right now.